This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back in on the drive, someone on the text line, we were talking about Tony Gonzalez, who he has a chance to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'd be stunned if he didn't get in. So on the text line said, check out his most recent tweet. That's probably why. It says, sorry to all my Chiefs fans. You know I love you, but being in Atlanta for the Super Bowl has me thinking of the good old days. And it's a couple of pictures from him with the Falcons. That's a big deal. Like, he played for the Falcons. The Super Bowl's in Atlanta. He's there. He's going to go in the Hall of Fame this weekend. So, like, come on now. Like, I feel like that's kind of nitpicking a little bit of my man Tony G.
Isn't that, that was against the Chiefs, though, right? So he's dunking a football over the goalpost at Arrowhead. And he put that picture up. I can see where it rubbed a couple of Chiefs fans the wrong way.
I mean, that was a big time moment, though. He had to dunk. I mean, he scored a touchdown in Kansas City. You got to dunk in that scenario.
I get it. He'll find out Saturday that he's going in, and he puts that up there. Come on now.
That's a really impressive class, though, when you think about it. Tony Gonzalez, Champ Bailey, and Ed Reed. That's not even counting any of the legends that can get in. I think Gil Brandt's probably going to get in this weekend.
Johnny Robinson, the former Chief, may get in as well.
Yeah, so it's just this has a chance to be like one of those really good classes in the NFL. They're all good, but this one has a chance to be really special. So you guys know I'm a big fan of top five lists, you know? So I have created my top five most disappointing Missouri moments since they've been in the SEC.
How long did it take you to come up with that? Because there can be a long list.
Probably about 9 minutes. Gotcha. It didn't really take long. Like, 1 through 3 was really easy. Mm-hmm. It was the 4 and 5 that's like, I can go in so many different directions that, you know, I had to finally whittle it down.
Is Michael Porter on there?
Well, do you have to wait for the
list? Okay, but I'm just curious.
Obviously, yeah, he's on the list.
Okay.
So, number 5. I put Frank Haith leaving for Tulsa. And in a tie, their athletic director left for Baylor.
Is that when Baylor was just an absolute train wreck, too?
In the middle of all the stuff that's happening for Baylor.
Yeah. Sex scandals and...
Like, literally all the stuff that's happening for Baylor.
Like, Ken Starr is trying to stop the bleeding there.
Their athletic director is like, you know what? I'd much rather be the athletic director. It wasn't really, like, heartbreak. It wasn't necessarily, like, disappointing. Like, Missouri happened again. It was just it can't be this bad.
It's like, why would you leave me for that train wreck over there?
Like, it was just one of those things that just, like, really cut deep. Yeah. And then when KU fans and K-State fans and, like, the national media made fun of Missouri, you just had to take it. Like, sometimes you can kind of make fun of, you can kind of, like, crack back.
Yeah.
You had absolutely no recourse to the athletic director at Missouri much rather be in the middle of Baylor's situation than your situation. So I have that at number 5. Number 4... I know it seems like a long time ago, Brad, but Missouri was 1 quarter away from playing for the national championship. 1 quarter away. They're in the SEC championship game. They were playing Auburn. They had the lead in the 4th quarter. Mm-hmm. All they had to do was stop Trey Mason. But nope, couldn't do it. You remember how terrified you were, Marlon Mack? Mm-hmm. That's what Trey Mason looked like.
Stupid 3-man defensive line. Every time.
Trey Mason absolutely destroyed the Missouri Tigers. And I would still argue the best Missouri team that they put together. I actually think that team's better than the 07 team. The best team that Missouri's probably put together in their football history was 1 quarter away from the national championship, but they just couldn't stop Trey Mason.
You knew that was going to happen, though, right? I mean, you had to know in your heart of hearts that there's no way that that was going to happen.
I actually went into that game feeling very good about it. Like, they had a really good chance to win.
But the closer you got, you knew it wasn't. There's no way that that was going to happen.
So he had 46 carries for 304 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, they basically went up against Tecmo Super Bowl Bo Jackson in the SEC championship game, and he completely ran circles against Missouri. I have that number 4 on my top 5 heartbreaking things that have happened to Missouri since they've been in the SEC.
Yeah.
Number 3.
Okay.
I tried to convince and tell myself that this was going to be a little bit different. But I didn't like the Kim Anderson hire.
Yeah.
I really wanted them to hire Ben Hallen in the beginning. Uh-huh. Like, I think most Missouri fans. But you know what? I let them talk me into Kim Anderson. And I remember I met Kim Anderson. And I told him. I was like, I was not a fan of your hire. But I heard you speak. I hear how much you love Missouri. You're an alum. I'm willing to be open-minded of this. And he was like, you know what? I appreciate that.
You said that to Kim Anderson.
100%.
Nice.
Their first basketball game. Not the second. Not the third. The first basketball game of the Kim Anderson era.
Yeah.
You know who they lost to?
Who?
UMKC. That at least at Missouri, you always could have the badge of honor.
At home.
At home. Mizzou Arena.
At Mizzou Arena.
Lost to the Ruse.
And, like, it wasn't one of those last-second surprising things. It was a they got outclassed from start to finish. At that moment, I should have known the Kim Anderson thing wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
But I tried to talk myself into it. You know, it isn't that bad. You know, it's not that bad. It's early. They're rebuilding. It's a new program. You got to be patient. So losing to UMKC in basketball in Kim Anderson's first game.
UMKC plays in, like, a high school gym. You realize that, right?
I mean, during the Missouri era when Kim Anderson was there, it was a high school gym at Mizzou Arena. That's how many people were at these games.
Gotcha.
Number two on my list. I remember watching him play in high school. I remember watching Dora Green Beckham play and saying, you know what? They might have Julio Jones on their team. I met freshman Odell Beckham Jr. Dora Green Beckham. Mm-hmm. Got my Beckhams all mixed up.
Gotcha.
He reminds me of Odell Beckham back when he was in high school.
Yeah.
And I remember I asked him, I was like, who do you compare yourself to? He looked me square in my face and said, Calvin Johnson. I was like, oh, man, we got Calvin Johnson? Oh, I was convinced that Matty Mock and Dorial Green-Beckham were going to win the SEC.
He should have compared himself to a pot smoker, don't you think?
And then, heading into his junior year, BK, back me up on this. Dorial was about to have a 15-touchdown kind of season.
He damn near did the year before.
He was about to punish SEC defenses. Him and Matty Mock were going to put together the greatest duo since Shaq and Penny, since Jordan and Pippen.
Remember that Tennessee game? OT?
Nope. Matty Mock had a drug issue. Dorial Green-Beckham couldn't keep his hands off women's. Both of them get kicked off the team. Number two disappointment for me. The careers of Matty Mock and Dorial Green-Beckham.
Wasn't Matty Mock like snorting lines on video or something?
On Snapchat.
Yeah, not good.
They literally had a video of him on Snapchat doing rails. And I was like,
apparently
it's done here.
Upon.
It's done here.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Kylie might have been there. You know, he was a Mizzou student.
Easy.
Kylie might have been the one shooting the thing,
he
allegedly.
Was the guy.
And then number one.
This is where it comes in.
Let me tell you guys a story.
This is personal to me, C-Dot, because I've seen you through this period of what you're about to talk about.
There was a family that decided to move from Gary, Indiana to Columbia, Missouri. They then, I don't know what happened. Their father had like super sperm or something.
Mm-hmm.
I have absolutely no clue what happened. But they had the greatest high school basketball player I've ever seen in my entire life in person. They had the next Kevin Durant. They had the next Paul George. And he just happened to live in Columbia, Missouri. He went to a Columbia high school. His dad worked for the University of Missouri. His sisters.
That's funny how that
played at the University of Missouri.
Funny how his dad ended up working at the university.
I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah. Big coincidence.
And then, you know what? I felt like he was lost. Because they had Kim Anderson, he was like, you know what? I'm not going to sign up to go play for them. I'm going to go somewhere else. And he went to the University of Washington. I remember thinking, you know what? It's over. It was a fun ride.
Yeah.
Missouri, countless number of heartbreaks. I mean, we missed out on Jason Tatum, who, you know, is going to make like $500 million in the NBA career. Tyler Hansbrough.
Yeah.
Otto Porter. Like, I could go Bradley Beal. I could go up and down the list of great players that Missouri lost to other universities. But you know what?
What?
I thought Porter was going to be on that list. I was like, man, there's no way he goes to Missouri. He's already committed to Washington. And then, you know what happened?
What?
Kim Anderson gets fired. And then Konzo Martin becomes the coach. And I remember it like it just happened yesterday. I was on Power Mizzou, and Gabe put out there that there's a chance Porter came back. And you should have saw the wave of excitement that this had rushed through the Missouri basketball program. I was thinking, you know what? We got a second lease on life. It was kind of like, there's something about Mary.
Yeah.
That you loved this girl, and then she went away for a while, but then she came back, and she looked exactly like how you remember she looked. That's how I felt about Michael Porter. And then something even more magical happened.
What was that?
Michael Porter decided, you know what?
Huh.
I want to play basketball not at Kansas, not at Duke, not at Kentucky, not at North Carolina. I want to play my 1 year of college basketball at the University of Missouri.
Is that because his dad got like $1 million to be on the staff?
I was so happy. I bought season tickets for the University of Missouri. Yeah. Cost me $2,500. But you know what? I didn't care because I wanted to be close to greatness. I remember I went to that first game. Oh, I was so excited. I took off work that day.
I remember that.
I drove down there. I got me a little CJ Wings BK. I stopped at Trops. Oh, I was feeling good. I was going to have an amazing day. We were going to stay. We got an Airbnb, me and my homies. We were just going to have a fun night out. Missouri was going to win this game. We were going to see Michael Porter.
He played a lot in that game, didn't he?
Michael Porter gets in the game. It's juiced. This was the most juiced I've seen Mizzou since Kansas was in there. I mean, it was fired up. He gets in there. He scores the first basket of the game.
Oh, boy.
I'm thinking Porter is about to give Iowa State a hot and ready 30 ball. Then all of a sudden, he goes to the bench. Everybody in the stadium sitting there like, man, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening with Michael Porter.
Yeah.
Doesn't play in that game.
Yeah.
Then you're thinking it's a leg issue. I'm thinking, maybe he's got a cramp, you know?
Yeah.
Doesn't go back in the game.
Yeah.
Then we're waiting. And I'm not going to lie. I'm talking to myself thinking, man, you know, this isn't this bad. You know, hey, they're just trying to be safe, you know? They're trying to be safe because of how much he's worth. I'm thinking Porter's going to come back. I made myself believe Porter was going to come back. And then Henry Lake is the one that told me, hey, you see what happened to Porter? No, what happened? He's out for the rest of the season. What? There's no Porter for the rest of the year? Done. Gone. And then, even worse, he then teases you the entire conference play. As your team's playing good basketball, they're going to make the tournament. He teases you with, you know, I'm going to come back. And then he comes back with the back of an 85-year-old man, out of shape, no conditioning. And you just get that little bit of a glimpse. Michael Porter is my number one disappointment of Missouri in the SEC.
But at least he's gone on to have a really productive NBA career, right? I mean, he's had a great rookie season.
Made a lot of money.
Yeah.
So this is my list. Frank Haith leaving for Tulsa and the athletic director going to Baylor. Trey Mason running for 1 million yards against Missouri. Losing to UMKC in basketball in Kim Anderson's first game. Dorial Green-Beckham and Matty Mock. And Michael Porter Jr. Those are my top five Missouri heartbreaks since they've been in the SEC.
Where does today's fall in there? Is that a top tenner?
No, I mean, it's not like this team was Alabama that they were going to go to the college football playoff. It's disappointing. But at this point, I mean, this is standard practice for the University of Missouri.
This is a typical Thursday.
Yeah, this happens all the time in Mizzou. That, like, I mean, I'm initially disappointed, and it's like, it's Missouri, man. We're Tiger fans, so I already know what's going to happen. So you wanted to bring up that the disappointment didn't just start in the SEC. It happened in the Big 12, too.
Oh, trailing by a point. Paul Winfield has set up most of the first half in foul trouble, scored the go-ahead basket. One last try for the Bruins of UCLA to get into the Sweet 16. Knocked out last year in the first round by Tulsa. They don't want to lose this one. Edney going the distance.
They didn't really put up wasn't a whole lot of defense there for Tyus Edney.
How do you let him just go to the basket like that?
Can I tell you how I saw that? I actually saw that when it happened. I was on a ski trip with a bunch of buddies from college, and I pulled a hammy or something. I'm like, I'm going back to the condo. I'm going to watch the tourney. I go back in there, and I'm watching this Mizzou-UCLA game, and I'm thinking, hey, Mizzou's looking pretty good here. And then I see Tyus Edney go the length of the floor, untouched, to beat Mizzou. And I had no idea that Mizzou would have such horrible luck ever since then.
No, it has not been. It has definitely not been good luck for the University of Missouri. Yeah.
Fifth down.
I mean, we could. I mean, we really could sit here.
Yeah.
We literally could sit here for the next.
Flea kicker, yeah.
Connor, I don't know how long you want to do. I mean, this one, like, I've never cried about a sporting event in my entire life.
Is this when they lost to Kentucky in football this year?
I've never cried at a sporting event. I'm not going to lie to you. I came really close to crying this day.
Matt Cressy will inbound. Gets it into his brother, Phil, who fires. A huge upset by Norfolk State over Missouri. Perhaps one of the biggest upsets in the history, certainly of early round play in the NCAA.
So Missouri was what, a 2 seed?
Yeah, they were a 2 seed.
Thank God for Duke.
Norfolk State was a 15. I was at that game as well. I had to go talk to Kim English after that game. I talked to Phil Pressey after that game. Michael Dixon after that game. That was a tough locker room, man. You got anything else?
I mean, if you guys want to sit here, I mean, we can continue.
Let's just get it on. I think it's therapeutic.
I mean, we can just continue to just. We can do this too if you want.
And you need stops. They've done all of the above. Can they get a stop here?
10.1 to go in the tie game. It's Pressey guarded by Johnson. Takes it all the way.
Hacked. Hacked is what he should have said. Hacked.
How fitting. In the 267th game between these two old rivals.
Okay.
I thought that was a
cut
clean,
it off. Brian. I don't need that anymore.
I thought it was a clean play. I didn't see
okay,
that.
Come on. It wasn't even a foul. It was a maul is what it was.
I thought it was a nice.
It was a maul.
I thought it was a clean play.
Thomas Robinson should have been charged for assault on that play. That's what he should have been. Should have been charged with assault.
Were you in the building for that game? Were you at
Alex? No, I told myself that I was only going to go, like, I went to the MUKU game at Mizzou Arena.
Yeah.
That I wasn't going to risk going to see him lose. Yeah. I saw him win. That was the last. I'm cool. I'm perfectly fine. So, no.
And Mizzou was up, what, 19 in that game?
Something okay, crazy? All right. We know the details.
I'm just trying to
We know the details.
I'm just trying to make sure
you don't got
to
get it back. We know what happened.
I'm just trying to let the people know.
We know what happened.
Yeah. What about last year, the year before, the end of when they were playing Florida?
Like, I mean, that one. I mean, that just.
That was very Mizzou, though.
I mean, that just happens every year. Like, those kind of losses, like last year, a heartbreaking loss at the end, like. Every single year that happens. So that doesn't even, like, that stuff. I don't even flinch at that kind of stuff.
That's not unique to Mizzou. Like, that stuff happens, but this stuff is pretty unique.
That kind of stuff happens to Missouri all the time.
That doesn't really happen to Kansas.
Yeah, that kind of stuff happens all the time. Yeah. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll take a trip around the Super Bowl to get you ready for the big game coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. All you got to do is keep it locked in right here. Plus, Missouri, they have spoken about the ruling today by the NCAA. We'll tell you what they had to say coming up in just a little bit. Plus, you have an unpopular opinion about the Super Bowl. We'll get to that in the 4 o'clock hour as well. But as we do every Thursday at this time, BK, let's go around the NFL.
All right, let's start with this. NFL fans all seem to want the Rams to win, but they all believe that the Patriots are going to pull this one out. According to an SB Nation poll, 75% of fans want the Rams to win the Super Bowl. On the other side, 69% of those same fans believe that the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. Where would you guys side on those two questions?
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. I don't really care who wins this game as long as it's competitive. Like, I don't really have the visceral hatred that many people do for the Patriots.
Yeah.
I definitely get it. Like, I get why you guys are tired of seeing the Patriots win. I get why you hate them. I get why there's Patriots fatigue exists. I'm just a very simple, just give me an entertaining game, and I got absolutely no problem with it. I don't care if it's Jacksonville playing Seattle. As long as it's two really good teams playing each other and it's really competitive and good football, then I'm all here for it. So I don't really care who wins this game. I do think that the Patriots are going to win. But I'm certainly not surprised that the country wants the Rams to win, but think the team that always wins these kind of games is going to win this game.
I think there's two really good storylines on both sides of this. I mean, I think if Belichick and Brady win another one, that's a hell of a story. And fans may not like it right now. But years from now, when you look back, you're like, man, that was one of the greatest dynasties we ever saw. And that's when we thought the Patriots were completely vulnerable. They went out and they won it. On the Rams side of this thing, and we had talked about this, this could have been a really special year for the Rams, or it could have absolutely imploded with the amount of free agents and personalities they brought in with a 33-year-old head coach. So I believe that Sean McVay is the Patrick Mahomes of coaches in the NFL right now. I think he's a really, really special individual. I'm with you, C-Dot. I just want to see a great game, and I think it will be. I will, however, pull for the Rams.
One of the questions that I feel like every time the Patriots are in the Super Bowl, we're kind of obligated to discuss is this one. Who's more important to the Patriots dynasty? Is it Bill Belichick or Tom Brady? Well, there was an interesting response to that from Carson Palmer. This is via FanSided.
I think Belichick is, and I think a great example of that is last week's game, or 2 weeks ago now's game against the Chiefs. He held the most explosive offense that this league has seen in a long time to 42 yards in the first half.
Yep.
And 0 points in the first half. That wasn't Tom Brady. And that was Bill Belichick. You can say that, you know, Matt Patricia and Flores and all these guys, Romeo Crennel, all these guys are the coordinators. Bill Belichick is the coordinator of that defense. He is creating that defense and building that defense to hold Patrick Mahomes to 0 points in the first half. That's like giving Brady 20. That's like spotting Brady 21 points.
You guys agree with Carson Palmer?
I always think these conversations are just kind of silly to me on the who's more important, Belichick or Brady, because they're both incredibly important. If I had to pick, I side with Belichick over Brady, but that's like a 51% to 49%. I firmly believe that the mind that Bill Belichick is, if you gave him, pick a middle-tier quarterback in the
Jacoby
NFL.
Jacoby Brissett.
I mean, that's not a middle-tier quarterback. If you give him
Carson Palmer.
I think that the Patriots win a Super Bowl if they have Carson Palmer during this run. I don't know if Brady ever becomes Brady without Bill Belichick. So if you're asking me to pick one of them, I think that Belichick might be the only coach maybe in the history of a dynasty to be more important than the best player.
Yeah, I think it's Belichick too, and I don't think it's close. And Brady's 199th overall pick in the draft. What happens to him if he goes somewhere else? Hell, a little bit closer to home. What happens to Mahomes if the Bills take him? What's he doing right now? I mean, you know, I think Tom Brady landed in a perfect situation, got two really big breaks when Drew Bledsoe got hurt and then the Tuck Rule game. Now, Brady, tremendous competitor, don't get me wrong. But without Bill Belichick and without a great organization around him, I'd be curious to see where a lot of really good quarterbacks ended up. So, yeah, I'm going to say Belichick in this one.
I think the Patriots example, I guess, when it comes to Brady is like everything perfectly came together at one time. Like, sometimes that's just – life is weird in that capacity. It was the right quarterback with the right coach, the right injury happened, like everything perfectly happened. The right call in the Tuck Rule game. Like, I actually think the Patriots probably go back to Drew Bledsoe the next year if they lose the Tuck Rule game. Yeah. Like, so many things had to kind of happen at one time. Now, Brady obviously made the most of his situation. Yeah. And then we saw in the Super Bowl that Brady just had, like – Brady was going to be great whether you wanted him to or not. But, yeah, I mean, just everything kind of fell in line in the right place, and Brady took advantage of his opportunity.
I mean, you just kind of wonder if he gets the opportunity that he got in New England somewhere else. I mean, that to me, I think that is one of the more fascinating questions in the NFL.
People watch the Super Bowl for different reasons. Some people are watching for the game. Some are watching for the halftime show. Others watch for the commercials. This year, people might be watching for something else entirely. This is Brian Curtis on the Ringer NFL Show.
The announcer of the Super Bowl has never been as big a storyline in the Super Bowl as Tony Romo is in this. That doesn't mean he's the best ever.
No.
Doesn't mean he's better than John Madden right now. John Madden's announcing was never as important to the Super Bowl lead up as Tony Romo's announcing is this year. I've never seen anything. This is a top five Super Bowl storyline.
How big of a story do you guys think Tony Romo's announcing is going into this game?
Zero.
Now, by CDOT's face, I'm assuming you guys are on the same side here.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, am I one of the few people that just doesn't want to bow down to Tony Romo as a broadcaster? I'm not saying his information isn't great, but listening to him, he sounds like an 8-year-old on the broadcast, jumping around, cutting off Jim Nance. I don't really care for it. So, no, to me, I don't want to hear Romo. I want to watch the game. So, to me, it's not a storyline whatsoever.
I think that Tony Romo is an exceptional broadcaster. I think that. So I'm not saying this to demean Romo in any ways. If Tony Romo calling the game is one of your top five storylines, that tells me you're not that interested in football. There's nothing wrong with that. Like you were saying, some people watch for the commercials. You're not someone who deeply cares about football. Somebody cares about the halftime show. You might love Maroon 5. I like Cardi B. I like Travis Scott. I'm way more interested in the game than I am in all those kind of things. Romo is perfectly fine, but to me, talking about all these things just goes to show how tired America is. We talked about Julian Edelman being in the Hall of Fame, even though he's never been to the Pro Bowl. Tony Romo was one of the biggest storylines for the Super Bowl. Stop it. Stop. We know that's not true.
No.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. And the NCAA sent a very dangerous message out today. Missouri responds. We'll tell you what it is coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in on The Drive, Carrington here, Fanning here, Brandon here, taking you up until 6 o'clock. Right now, it is your chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. Text the word transit, TRANSIT, transit to 72881. That's transit. If you want Chiefs Talk and a chance to win 1,000 on the 30s, there's only one station in Kansas City giving you both weekdays, 7A to 7P. It pays to listen to the largest sports radio company in the world. Message and data rates may apply. Your next chance to win is coming up in 1 hour, but why not go ahead and win right now? One more time for those of you in the back that are hard of hearing.
What?
Text the word TRANSIT, T-R-A-N-S-I-T, TRANSIT, to 72881. Your national cash contest word for 430 is TRANSIT. Earlier today, we got the opportunity to catch up with TJ Moe, and he is pretty much saying what everybody is saying. The NCAA is setting a dangerous precedent to lie, lie, lie.
Missouri fully cooperates and does everything that's asked, and they get crushed compared to North Carolina, who just says, hey, well, once you're caught in a lie, just keep lying and hope that nobody catches up to you. I mean, it's just absolutely brutal. The NCAA is setting the precedent that there's no reason to ever cooperate. Why would you?
I mean, that's exactly what happened with Missouri. That Missouri was forthcoming, gave the information to the NCAA, and then they got busted. And now they potentially could not be playing in a bowl game. Jim Stark was asked earlier today if this sends a message to not cooperate with the NCAA. Quote, I think that it's a sad day if that's the world we live in, but I do believe in doing the right things the right way, and we're going to continue to do things the right way, and I think it has to be corrected on the other side. Jim Stark, who is the athletic director at Missouri, he thinks Missouri is going to win this appeal.
I think that we'll continue to give them information, and we'll involve them in the understand that there's an appeal going on, and we expect to win that appeal.
This is the most frustrating part of the entire process to me as a Missouri Tiger fan. The message cannot be dishonest with the NCAA and have a stricter penalty. Mm-hmm. Because I think it is impossible. Like with anything, there's normally precedent set that if you do X going forward, this is going to be the baseline penalty for it. Like when you're a kid and you break curfew and your mom tells you, hey, if you break curfew, the curfew is at 12. You show up at 12:05. Hey, there's no TV for a week. And then your sister does the exact same thing. Sister has the same story you got. She shows up 12:05. She only gets 2 days. You're sitting there thinking, what? Hold on. The precedent was set. If you show up after curfew, you get a week detention. You get grounded for a week. So hold on. How did my sister only get 2 days in this? It's hard, I think, to look at the Missouri issue and not couple it with what happened at North Carolina. North Carolina for 18 years had a fake class set up. That's not hyperbole. If you don't know much about the North Carolina story, they had a fake African-American studies class set up that I think what got them off the hook is anybody could take this class, but predominantly this class was for athletes. That they were not letting you or not making you go to class, and in some cases they would only have to write one paper that wouldn't even really be graded. It was a made-up course to keep athletes eligible to play. That maybe you would be ineligible based on your own academic merit. But if you sign up for this class, we'll get you an easy A that'll boost up your GPA. We'll keep you on the field. You can keep playing basketball, keep playing football. We don't care if you're smart. We don't care if you graduate with honors. We just got to keep you eligible and keep you on the field. That Missouri, I don't think anybody on Missouri's side is acknowledging that there was wrongdoing here. This tutor, whether she was told from somebody, whether she went rogue, whatever happens. There was somebody who Missouri trusted to help educate athletes at Missouri and students at Missouri that didn't do her job, that took tests for students, that tried to circumvent the system. Nobody denies that. That's not an argument on either side. But you can't penalize institutions for giving you the information, complying. Your own committee of infractions comes to the conclusion of it was not forced upon her by the administration or by any one of the coaches. Then how can the message be we are going to penalize you more than North Carolina, even though their courses penalized or helped, in this case, hundreds of students, when literally only 12 students at Missouri was helped by this situation?
Well, and you're right. And the thing at North Carolina, according to the story on ESPN, the former department chair and the former secretary failed to cooperate with the NCAA during their investigation. So basically, they didn't say anything. They just or lied, or didn't say a word, didn't cooperate, didn't do anything to try to help the NCAA in the investigation in North Carolina. We're on the other side of it. Missouri came clean, found a problem, reported to the NCAA, and now they're getting nailed. You're right. It's not fair. It's wrong. So basically, what the NCAA is saying by their actions is that lie to us. Just shut up. Don't say anything. Don't make people available to us. Because the NCAA can't subpoena anybody. They're not the cops, man. They're not the feds. You know, they can't come to you and say, this person has to talk. So North Carolina had the two people that were in charge of this deal. They had them not cooperate with the investigation. They got a slap on the wrist. Missouri gets absolutely crushed. I got a text from a buddy of mine who's big in the baseball community, and he talked about how this is going to crush Missouri baseball. You know, you're losing visits. You're losing all this stuff. You're losing 5% of your scholarships. And the baseball coach, Coach Beiser, has been there for, I think it's year two for him. He had nothing to do with any of this stuff. Baseball only gets 11.7 scholarships for the entire team. So what baseball teams try to do is they try to split them up, spread them out over like 30 guys. And they really go after players that can get academic money so they can give a baseball player less baseball scholarship money. They get 11.7 scholarships, and they're losing 5% of their scholarships. So they're losing over a full scholarship, essentially, for this thing. It's ridiculous, man. Missouri, they didn't, and I'm a Kansas fan. Missouri's getting screwed in this deal on about 50 different levels. And I hope Jim Sterk's right. I hope the appeals process works because this is wrong. Like, this is wrong what the NCAA did to Missouri today.
I look at the NCAA, and if you want to couple it, because I understand that all of you don't cheer for Missouri like I do. The NCAA, to me, has sent very dangerous precedents when it comes to Missouri and how they've handled Kansas, I think, in all the situations. That you can lose your entire college eligibility, and we will run you through the ringer for such a small amount of money. That $2,500 in a life sense, we agree, is not an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah.
Now, for some people, I'm not saying everybody's financial situation is different, but if you are a billion-dollar company the way Adidas is or the way Kansas basketball and the university is, a multi-million-dollar corporation, $2,500 is a very small amount of money where we see in some situations, some kids receive extra benefits. They're able to then pay it back. They can get on the court. That, hey, we are going to keep your eligibility and dangle it over you the entire season to not just you, your fans, your team for the entire season, never tell you anything about it, never have any transparency. Mark Emmert can never speak about it. What they're doing to Kansas is wrong. Like, I've been saying this the entire time. What they're doing to Kansas is wrong.
You're talking about the Silvio DeSosa.
What they're doing to Missouri is equally as wrong as what's happening to Kansas in this scenario. That, again, no one is denying that something wrong happened at Missouri. But the message you're sending to students can't be, in some situations, it is better for you to lie and be dishonest in what we can agree is a more serious issue in North Carolina, as opposed to telling the truth in Missouri in something that only affects 12 students. 12 students were affected with this. I would understand if this was some rampant level cheating where the entire 2013 team, like, no, that's not what happened here. We had Dennis Dodd earlier, and I thought he said it well. This is not some mastermind conspiracy that was happening at Missouri.
There wasn't any conspiracy here. There was nothing to hide. Missouri missed this person. She did it out of, it looks like she did it out of need for money. She said she was pressured, but can't name the person who pressured her there. So I think it's kind of suspicious, the person or person. So that's what we're left with. Those are the facts the NCAA has. And out of that, they come with a postseason ban for three sports.
This was not some master conspiracy. This was not, in my opinion, even something very serious. I think what happened at the University of Missouri happens at every single college.
Yeah, not just with the athletes either. I mean, we in my fraternity at Emporia State, I mean, we had, you know, stacks and stacks and files of former tests that were taken, and you're getting ready to go take another test, you know, and I'm going to find out if that, I'm going to go look at the last four tests that were given by that professor in that class, and I'm going to review them. Happens everywhere, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, academic fraud and academic cheating is happening, and I would say on every team that you ever watched in college, somebody there was getting some help that they shouldn't be getting when it comes to taking tests and doing all that stuff. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City, and we'll also give you another chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. So, earlier today on ESPN.com, they had a list. It was the top trades in the NFL over the last 365 days. Number one was the Khalil Mack trade. Number two was the Cowboys trading for Amari Cooper. Number three was the Jets trading up to go get Sam Darnold. Number four was the Rams trade for Brandon Cooks. Number five was the Patriots trading for their left tackle in Trent Brown. And number six was the Alex Smith trade to Washington. I'd probably go the Alex Smith trade over the Patriots trade, just based on the fact of what it meant for those two organizations. Now seeing what happened to the Washington Redskins and then seeing how it opened the door for Patrick Mahomes, I'd probably put the Chiefs and Redskins trade in the top five. But that's just me. And I was really curious where Marcus Peters was going to come on this list. So I'm looking down, number seven to Lamar Jackson, and I'm looking down. And then I found it. So number 13, they have it. The Rams get an all-pro cornerback in Marcus Peters. So the Chiefs, as you know, traded Marcus Peters to the Rams and a sixth-round pick, pick 209. The Rams then traded to the Chiefs a fourth-round pick, which the Chiefs used for Armani Watts, and the Chiefs have an upcoming second-round pick courtesy of the Los Angeles Rams that can either be pick 63 or 64 in this year's upcoming NFL draft. They gave that trade a B- from the perspective of the Rams. Now, I agree with you from the Chiefs' standpoint. It is impossible to look at this trade right now and say that the Chiefs won or lost this trade because I have no clue what they get with that second-round pick. Like, maybe they take that trade and they get the next great defensive lineman for this organization and you got a four-year rookie contract. I have absolutely no clue how they're going to spend that second-round pick. But let me ask you this. What do the Chiefs need to do with that second-round pick for you to say that they won the trade? Because the Rams, from their perspective, it looks like the Rams are the winner of the trade. I wouldn't even say that this is a that this is one of those win-win trades for the Chiefs. You traded Marcus Peters during the window of Patrick Mahomes. They got to the Super Bowl. He played a lot better the second half of the season for them. You got Armani Watts, who you liked for a time, but then got injured. So you essentially in this past season, the 2018 season, you essentially got nothing for Marcus Peters. What you traded for Marcus Peters to help you this year, got hurt in the middle of the season, got nothing for Marcus Peters. What needs to happen in your mind for this to be a successful trade for the Kansas City Chiefs?
I think you need two starters out of that deal. I think Armani Watts needs to be a starting safety, and I think they need to draft a starter and a guy that makes an impact within 2 years. Hopefully next year, that can help that defense get over the top. Let me ask you this, though. I want to throw this at you, C-Dot. Like, what if D4 doesn't line up off sides and the Chiefs go to the Super Bowl? Does the grade for that trade change? Because the Rams got to the Super Bowl with Peters, and then the Chiefs would have got to the Super Bowl without him, and they got two draft picks out of the deal. It's one penalty, one thrown flag that separates those two teams from getting to the exact same place, and the Chiefs got two picks out of it, and the Rams may not re-sign Marcus Peters.
I mean, I guess I would disagree in that context of because what the Rams traded for actually helped them. They traded the 63rd overall pick. Mm-hmm. They traded that pick. So nothing that the Chiefs, at least so far, have received in return have helped them so far this season.
Yeah.
Now, you might argue addition by subtract and not having Peters on this team this year. But, I mean, we watched this secondary group. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that having Orlando Scandrick mm-hmm. for the first 8 weeks was better than having Marcus Peters.
Sure.
I'm not going to tell you here that Steven Nelson is better than Marcus Peters. Peters struggled the first half of the season. The numbers bear it out. Peters will tell you that he struggled the first half of the season. I think we learned that maybe Sutton did a good job in hiding some of Peters' deficiencies, and I think we saw that if you got a really strong corner on the other side or you mm-hmm. can do some of the things with Peters, you can hide some of his deficiencies. He is not a perfect on-the-field player, certainly not a perfect off-the-field player. But, man, the second half of the season, the production that you got for Peters certainly could have helped you get over the hump. And right now, while the urgency is to capitalize on this window of Mahomes on this rookie contract, that's where I am. Like, I agree with you. I'm not necessarily even with two starters. One of the two picks that you traded for Marcus Peters needs to help you capitalize on the window. Because even if you weren't going to sign Marcus Peters, he was on his rookie contract last year or this year, so this season that we're currently playing, and then next year. So you never had to make the decision. You very easily could have let Marcus Peters walk in free agency. You could have dealt with some of the off-the-field stuff. He could have walked in free agency. And even if you dislike Marcus Peters, we can agree, he was always there to help you on the field. I don't mm-hmm. think it was going to be some fake injury or doing some of those things to not play. Peters was going to show up, and he was going to do what he had to do to kind of get paid once he left the Chiefs. So I'm kind of looking at, now we look at this trade. We agree, it was a good trade for the Rams. That's a trade I'd like to see the Chiefs do. Hey, trade a future second-round pick. Try to get somebody who can step in from day one, who can try to help you capitalize on this window. It's still very incomplete for the Chiefs, but I've been saying this. They need to trade for an established player with that second-round pick. They need to trade for a guy who's not a project, not even a guy who's a rookie. You need to trade for somebody who can, from day one, we're talking about coming out of training camp, this is somebody that can help the Chiefs get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that would make it a success. But again, I'm on the side of incomplete right now. It's like saying, hey, you got a top five recruiting class. you know, at you know, pick your college. How do you grade the recruiting class? Well, I haven't seen them play yet. They're 18. They're not even on the field yet. We haven't seen who the Chiefs are going to get for the pick they got from the Rams, and we barely got to see Armani Watts because he got hurt and got put on IR. So they could put the it certainly helped the Rams having Marcus Peters on the other side of Aqib Talib. There's no arguing that. But we could look back in 3-4 years and say the Chiefs got the better end of this thing. I think that could very easily happen. I don't know if that's going to happen, but to sit here and try to grade that trade right now, and I know ESPN needs its clicks and all that stuff, but I don't see how you can grade it from a Chiefs standpoint.
I think you can from the Rams' perspective, though.
From the Rams, because it got them in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, so the Rams right now, we agree, are clearly winning the trade, and it's not even close.
Yeah,
what I'm saying is, they traded for something that is helping their team. The Chiefs, up to this point, they have gotten absolutely nothing for Marcus Peters.
Yeah, not much, unless Armani Watts turns into a starting safety for them, which very well could happen. I was high on him coming out of Texas A&M, and we don't know who they're going to get with the second-round pick that they've got this year. The extra one in the Peters deal. So, yeah, from the Rams' perspective, they're winning the trade right now. But from the Chiefs' perspective, they haven't even used the second-round pick, the extra one that they got for him.
I want to play this for you really quickly, and we'll get to the hits coming up in just a little bit. But it kind of looks like a team is starting to zero in on Bryce Harper. So he is meeting with the Padres today, or tomorrow. He's meeting with the Padres. And the Phillies, they've been dying to get Bryce Harper.
If the Phillies and the White Sox had made an offer that Harper or Machado had found acceptable, they would have signed that offer by now. It's free agency. Anything goes, and I don't know that anybody can be bothered. If the Phillies or White Sox are that interested, go ahead, pay them.
Well, bottom line is, though, Kenny, we all know that the Padres are not going to outbid the Phillies or the White Sox.
We thought that for Eric Hosmer, too, Chris, and I don't know how you can rule out any team at any time. I'm not saying the Padres are the favorite. Don't get me wrong. Do I believe they're going to sign him? No. But at the same time, to just say that they're a stalking horse or leverage or something like that, evidently they don't feel that. They got on a plane to go to Las Vegas today to meet with Harper.
So that was Ken Rosenthal of MLB Network. Man, free agency has been a very weird game. I guess when it comes to the Padres where are the Padres getting all this money? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Yeah. How do you have the money to pay Eric Hosmer last year, and now you're dead center in the Bryce Harper sweepstakes? I want to know what the Padres are doing. Is this now giant market to be signing these kind of guys to free agent deals? Because whatever they're doing, the Royals need to find a way to start doing it.
Well, I mean, there's no salary cap. You can spend as much as you want. If the owner's got the money, wants to spend it, you can do whatever you want with them. I mean, to me, it looks like, and I don't know who Bryce Harper's agent is. I'll have to look that up. But, I mean, it's Boris. So, basically, Boris is doing the exact same thing with Bryce Harper that he did with Eric Hosmer.
It worked.
I think we can all agree that Boris and Hosmer were using the Padres to get another deal somewhere else. It didn't work. Nobody bit for Hos. Bryce Harper is a different animal. I think they're using the Padres just like other cities use Kansas City when it says, hey, we're thinking about moving our team. We might go to Kansas City because we want a new arena here in Pittsburgh. They're using the Padres. That's exactly what's going on. And truthfully, in San Diego, that's a place where you need stars. You got to have stars in San Diego because you got a beach, you got a lot of stuff going on there, and you better have some stars for people to come out and watch that baseball team. And especially since you're the only show in town, like the only sports dollar that gets spent in San Diego right now is on Padres baseball. They're going to be pulling in some cash, man. I don't think the Padres, this is my gut, I don't think the Padres are a serious player for Bryce Harper. I think Boris is just using them like he used him when he had Eric Hosmer.
I mean, but I guess the difference in the Hosmer is he eventually went to the San Diego Padres. Like, I'm with you. Everybody thought that, man, there's some bigger play involved. There wasn't a bigger play involved. If anything, looking back at it, Boris kind of used Kansas City to get a different offer. Of the Royals really seemed to it. They were going to the Padres of, hey, Kansas City really wants Bryce Harper or really wants Eric Hosmer. What are you willing to do to sign him? And then they gave Hosmer a way better deal than what Kansas City was willing
to do. But again, I don't think Hos and Boris ever wanted to end up in San Diego. The information that I got, once the offers weren't out there, Hos wanted the deal that he had in Kansas City and it was off the table. You know, that deal was gone because the Royals had looked at like, man, we just about gave a contract to Eric Hosmer that was almost twice as much as we gave Alex Gordon, almost twice as big as the biggest contract that had ever been given to a Kansas City Royal, and Hos and Boris turned their nose up at it and used San Diego to drive the deal up. And when it came down and it was only San Diego that was going to offer Hos that deal, the information that I got, he went back to the Royals, wanted to come to Kansas City, and that deal was gone. So I think Boris is using San Diego to drive up the price for the Phillies or someplace else. Bryce Harper.
Kind of his job, too, though, right?
Oh, absolutely,
like
it is.
His job is literally to do that.
Totally. Yeah, there. I'm not bagging on Scott Boras for it. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I think that's what I think they're using the Padres right now because what are we, 2 weeks away from pitchers and catchers? Mm-hmm. Like, it's getting tight. It's getting tight to get some of these guys signed.
Coming up in 2 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City, and we'll give you another chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.